Carl Herman, Mission Viejo, Brian Davidson, Houston, Texas. Need to know news. This is Sunday, the 25th, the end of August, 2024. Let's take a look at our stories and have opening statements. All right, we're going to the war for updates there. The Democratic National Convention. Boy, was that funny. Cackler, Kamala versus Trump, facts and optics, RFK2's upcoming role. The economy is a lie to hide parasitic banksters, rigged casino, one update with COVID. And then we're going to take a look at an AI rendition of the 1893 Chicago World Fair with the question of, oh, is there an old world and would it return in some form? Brian, opening statement, brother.
Well, it's been quite a week. I've spent a lot of time on the streets, filling up the hours, which is good. Getting tired of street work. It's probably time to make an adjustment. I've been doing this job now for 15 years, and I'm just not making enough money. So it's probably time to look at something else. I've got a lot of different ideas, as I always have. I'm also helping my wife with her her catering and go boat business. Keeping me busy day in and day out, while at the same time taking care of the mother-in-law and getting the kids off to school. So finally, Cortland's off in college. She's at Houston Baptist University, which is now known as Houston Christian University. Expensive school, there's no doubt about that. She's on the cheer squad. She'll do fine there. So there's been all sorts of family events that we've had to be attending and helping her get moved into the dorm. But now I feel like a big empty nester right now. And I'm sort of smelling a change in the air. Like, what am I going to do next? How am I going to make adjustments? What direction am I going to go? I still need to make a lot more money. I'm only 52 years old, and there's a lot of work to do if that's the case, if I'm going to start something new in my 50s.
God bless you, brother, and for all of our audience members. One of the characteristics, as a social studies teacher teaching economics, one of the facts that would just hit me in the face again and again is that human beings have developed into the most extraordinary creatures because we're so tortured, poisoned, mind-controlled, and impoverished. We have to scramble and hustle, and that's a unique being. If we win this thing and we're free, there's going to be a self-expression that is a different dimension, but it's, may we all take the lessons that we've learned by having to hustle. It's crazy, highly stressful.
I don't worry about things too much, but yeah, you're right. There's a time and a place for, okay, I got to go to bed nice and early tonight. Got to be focused tomorrow. Sit down, plan out my day, decide who I'm going to meet, how I'm going to do it, what direction I'm going to go, what I'm going to say. I don't think I'll have any trouble. I've got some good ideas and some great training under my belt from years ago, and I think that the business I'm going to find myself in is going to be revising corporate healthcare structures. I used to design systems. Spent the first 15 years of my life becoming one of the top guys in the field, totally redesigning corporate ERISA plans. You have to custom build the third-party administration packages for claims processing and redesign the networks. There's all sorts of things that we had to do as part of trying to salvage it. But there's just so much money to be made in the game, and the fact that I've spent 15 years being a private investigator and missing out on it makes me kick myself in the ass. There's been so much opportunity out there, but I just didn't want to do it because Obamacare basically commoditized the entire healthcare game, which made my trade obsolete, apparently. But I think it can be resurrected. There's a lot of old risk management techniques that can be brought back to play that nobody else is doing. And I still have those old legacy structures that I worked on in the past. Just they're skeletonized now. So we'll see if I can design something new.
Well, hopefully, brother, hopefully. And may we all experience and express synergy, which my mentor, Bucky Fuller, described as the key to his life and making a contribution, and that he had a deep relationship with God in no small part, he said, from just his good faith effort and exploration, beginning at the age of, I don't know, just after World War I as a young man, he just attempted to express himself with what he could do for engineering solutions to problems. And his life was just one failure after another, but a compilation of inventions And he said that life would, I don't want to say rescue him, but that would step in at exactly the appropriate moment. And one of the things that Bucky would always do when given praise, he would say, "It's all God. It's all God. I could have been shut down any time and had no response, but pathways opened up before me." And the idea of synergy is this unimaginable and unpredictable results. It's like one and one is going to be equal to three. So we'll see what happens. Well, let's just jump into the news, because I think that the context of what we're talking about is synergetic. All right, let's go to the war, or at least what we're shown of a war. And we have here: Israel strikes a market and school in Gaza, killing at least 20 Palestinians, with what we're at least shown. And as a professional historian and college-level U.S. government teacher, I have no confidence that any of this is real. I have no confidence in anything that we're shown in images and corporate
Carl,
media.
we're seeing a photographic screen, not the article.
Ooh.
Photographic screen of a farm.
Oh, thank you. Then let's go here. Now you got it? Okay. All right. So this is the Al Jazeera report. And we have these images, and these are typical of the images that we've been shown, which looks like death and destruction. But I don't know anymore. I don't know. AOC falsely claims Kamala Harris working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire. And this is how they roll us, and it's totally bullshit. And if she was working for a ceasefire, they'd have one. She is the vice president in charge of the administration arming a genocide. That's what we're being shown. We're shown a war criminal, but they're going to spin it as a virtue signal for peace while they're killing. And I just wanted, there were just two updates, but I wanted to throw in here for the context. If you haven't seen it yet, audience members, John Hankey, friend, colleague, LA Unified AP US history teacher for Los Angeles Unified School District. October 7th was an inside job, 55-minute video. And he just walks through what we were shown on the news and then adds some expert testimony and exactly what we've been talking about. And I'll give you a synopsis in just a moment. And this is the history that I have based on published research via the Claremont Colleges of Israel's history, decades of Orwellian illegal war of aggression, plus the blockade on Gaza, the world's largest concentration camp. A blockade is an act of war. They've been doing it for 17 years. And then there's the context of the USS Liberty murders. If you're not aware of that 1967 false flag, where the Israeli military and Navy attempted to sink the USS Liberty as a false flag to get us into the that war at that time on the side of Israel. The Levant affair, dressing as Palestinians to hurl rocks. And then the ongoing context that this war thing is illegal. And again, published research. And in terms of this whole thing, starting it again, October 7th was a false flag attack. And we've covered it bits and bits. And last week with Joe and Chris, we had another former IDF man explain to us, and I liked it. The Israeli self-expression, I can enjoy it when it's virtuous, because they're kind of like the French, and that they're very quick to tell you're stupid when you're stupid. And this Israeli was saying that he was in IDF Air Force, and he was saying 5 minutes for a helicopter to blast that away. And then he said all the military does is train and practice. And again, on that border, they had sound, motion, heat, eyes on. And for those of you who don't know, all the military do is they practice and train, and they have contingencies, all the contingencies that you can imagine. They game out. So John Hankey's documentary of October 7th was an inside job just points out all the reports that something was going to happen. It was shown on the border practicing. people were complaining about it and pointing about it and communicating to the IDF and the government officials. The government officials says, "Oh no, there's nothing to worry about. You're totally safe." And then that concert at 7 a.m. in the morning, right there in the attack zone, the IDF stood down, drew in whoever those false flag participants were, and then stood down for 6, 7, 8 hours, and then came back in with heavy artillery, killed everyone, and blamed Hamas. And then the whole idea that October 7th, the ongoing attack that was shown, is somehow self-defense. No. The law, war law, is similar to law that would be applicable to any of us on the street. If we're attacked or even an imminent threat, oh yeah, we can defend ourselves from that. But once that attack is done, any action therefore after, that is retaliation, that is retribution, and that would be similar. And what the law is supposed to do is that you would take that security concern to the UN Security Council. And of course, the UN Security Council, they're Orwellian. Their job is to prevent these wars of aggression, not to enable them, but they just enable them, and it's just all virtue signaling that is applicable. But the Emperor's New Clothes obvious conclusion is that Israel is an offensive power against helpless civilians, and then bombing the schools and the hospitals. Those are war crimes within an illegal war of aggression. Brian, your thoughts, brother.
Well, October 7th, I mean, I don't want to go over it in too much detail, but I had enough video within the first couple of days, just from basically scraping 153 News, the original videos from the ground, and I was convinced that it was the same type of false flag that I'd seen hundreds of times before. This one looked very similar to Las Vegas with a couple of adjustments, but the idea that, when these sort of para choppers or para whatever came flying over the hill, and everybody was dancing away at 6:30 in the morning, obviously fresh and ready to go and spend their day, and then fleeing in fear, even though they were, military trained youth. It was preposterous. The whole thing seemed staged. There was nothing I saw in it that made me feel like it was legit. Now, again, at Las Vegas, some of the people in the audience were actually legit, were actually recording and actually questioning the events as they took place. I got those videos nice and early, so I had a nice set of videos to work with very early in Las Vegas. And it wasn't exactly the same case here. We got sort of the big picture and a big overview, but what they were saying, what they were laying out was completely impossible. Now, again, with the false flags, you can spend all time, you can spend as much time as you want until you're convinced that it's fake, the event is engineered. That doesn't take too long to get to that conclusion. But the bigger conclusion is why? Well, in this case, you had the mainstream media shortly following that were, coherently explaining why they needed to go and clean out Gaza and all the boogeymen and all the hostages. And so to me, it was clearly sort of a gentrification type of operation as well as a fear operation, but they needed to justify what they couldn't pull off politically independent of some sort of attack. So they manufactured an attack to be able to pull it off politically to go gentrify the Gaza Strip and get rid of the rotten goy that are the Palestinians. So to me, it was just simply an expansion program. Well organized, obviously rehearsed, shot off of multiple cameras on multiple days with multiple actors in a situation that was ridiculous. And then, of course, they had to fabricate all the horrific images and they blow up all the vehicles as part of the game. Who carries that much explosives on their back if they're going to infiltrate a festival? Who carries? It's preposterous. It's preposterous. But the world doesn't care because the media gaslights it. Nothing new there for any of our listeners.
And in terms of your opening statement, brother, when you're talking about kicking yourself and the 15 years that you invested in good faith as a private investigator allowed you to make the contributions that you're just talking about here and the several false flags to bolster our case. And that leveraged helps just to add to the 100% of the evidence on our side and none of the evidence on the other side. And as a teacher, I was talking to I don't remember who I was talking to, but as a as an award-winning teacher, I was fired four times. My last district tried to fire me five different times. And the job that I was producing, I won awards by two Los Angeles mayors as one of the best teachers in Central Los Angeles. Semester anonymous student surveys, the average grade I would receive from students was A plus. The counselors at all the schools that I would work with would eventually come and talk to me. When I would see them, they would say, "Hey, Herman, you are by far the most requested teacher in your department." And yet I was fired four times for producing outstanding student learning and then trying to get into projects to improve the culture. And this was in LA Unified, the same school district that John Hankey was at for the first 15 years of my career. And what I discovered, of course, and I was too stupid to see it at the time until, let's see, after I was fired three times. Then after the third time, I was like, okay, so the same people who are running our government have infiltrated public education and they have to squash anybody who is self-expressed who could point to the emperor's new clothes conditions. So and I kept on looking, and every new position I would find myself in just allowed me to have a new opening and for me to understand that I'm kind of a pawn on the board. I guess that's the point that I really wanted to make, and that there are higher forces in play. And I keep saying, and this is one of the things that Bucky also felt and lived, all you need to do is move forward in good faith effort and keep hustling, and a door will open, and just trust that that's the right door for the right time, and just to keep moving forward. All right. Democratic National Convention. Got a bunch of those. And Brian, if you have anything to say, just jump in. We have a lot of these, but all right, Scott Jennings stuns other CNN host. Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years, but everything is Trump's fault. And this is such a stunning minute or so. I'll play it. So here it is, CNN, and here are these propagandists and this guy. Oof.
In all these speeches, as good as they were, is that she's in the White House right now. Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years. And for all of the talk about division and the problems in the country and people are hurting, Democrats have mostly controlled this country. Trump had it for four. The Obamas and Biden had it for the rest of the time. And somehow, it's still all Trump's fault, and somehow she hasn't been at the center of it. So to me, that's still the glaring hole in this campaign that hasn't yet been solved at the convention. How do you explain all of the problems that will be solved by the person who is currently in there for the last 3.5 years who is supposed to already be working on solving it? But
I don't know what's going on in the background. I don't know if he's just thinking out loud. I don't know if he's a plant on our side. I don't know anything. But we're seeing the reversal and the recognition that the threat to democracy are the Dem leaders in this case. So this is an interesting testimony. My buddies and I were at the driving range today when two guys in suits and one woman in a dress approached us and asked if we had plans. Then they offered us each $150 if we attended tonight's DNC. We're not very political and could use the 150, so we agreed. We thought they were kidding. Sure enough, they gave us each ticket. We had to use that to get into the DNC in this side hallway, and then we'd be paid in cash. We thought it was a joke, but we wanted to put it to the test. Sure enough, we did it, and we were indeed paid 150. We took some free pizza and left. We're voting for Trump. James O'Keefe goes undercover at the DNC convention, confronts Act Blue over allegations of false donations. So O'Keefe jumped in there. And the Act Blue, we talked about that I'll play just a minute of this, and it is kind of fun. The Act Blue were the money launderers, and that they would pretend that you had individuals giving hundreds of small donations to different candidates to launder the money.
To get a wristband to get inside them. Here we go.
We were going to use actblue.com to make the donation. If we could maybe have that money transferred through all these different people to make more of an impact, because it seems like that's what you guys are doing.
Yeah, yeah. So any questions you have, you can send to support.
Have you heard of James O'Keefe, O'Keefe Media?
Yeah, I'm going to call it too.
And he unmasks, and nobody wants to talk to him, of course, because they're busted and they run away from him. Speaker at the DNC says, the quiet part out loud. We got 70 days to act right. After 70 days, we can go back to acting crazy. Wow, that's an interesting admission.
We got 70 days to act right, y'all.
That's right.
Now, after 70 days, we can go back to acting crazy. Right?
Hillary Clinton. Was that just a bad mask? Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. All right, there's a, let's see, which is, this is the one here. Three different national conventions and three different Hillarys. Those are three different people, it looks like to me. And the facial structure of the 2020 was really telling. All right, and then you have it's either Obama or an actor, I don't know. But he made a dick joke on Trump. And then Trump had at least two follow-ups, too, that I saw that, brutal, brutal with the optics.
Now, some people say that Donald Trump is a big man, if you know what I mean. But let me tell you something. My husband, Big Mike, has a bigger penis than Donald Trump will ever have.
Ouch. Oops, we do not want this continuing. No, we don't want this continuing. Okay, and then...
I'm assuming that was a joke, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that was...
He didn't really say that.
No, he didn't say that. He made... I'm not going to play it for people, but he did make a dick joke. Now, this is Obama's official painting, and I want to point out, you know, the part of Big Mike next to him is not part of the painting. But Obama's left arm, he's got an extra finger here on his left hand, if you can see. And then in this foliage, there was some satanic image. I forget what it was, but that was the official picture. Very nice, very nice. And then... Van Jones said he didn't know he was in a spiritual desert until the Obamas created an oasis on stage. I want to point out that what, as a history teacher, when we talked about World War II, we talked about cults of personality and that the focus wouldn't be on the policy, but on the personality of the leadership. And that's exactly what you're going to see. Van Jones, who was an insider for the Obama administration and an early DEI lawyer. That this fawning that he's going to talk about.
Rather remarkable. I didn't know how much I missed them. I missed them. I missed that. I miss hearing that. You know, Biden did something important last night, and he transferred the machinery of the party to Kamala Harris. The Obamas renewed the magic of the movement. That's what they were transferring. And they did it beautifully. They did it powerfully.
You know, and I just want to interrupt him for a moment here to point out that this guy isn't going to say shit about ordinary Americans or any policy. He's just going to fawn on about his feelings. And that's part of what you got to have for an empire is that you have an emotional response.
Powerfully. Obama used nostalgia in a beautiful way. He didn't say...
Oh, and then the cult of personality, you can see down here at CNN, is that President Obama said Trump's act has gotten pretty stale. Yeah, it's all projectionists the other way around.
America great again. We're going to go back. He reminded everybody of the best things about our families, about our neighborhoods. That was beautiful. And then Michelle, she wasn't doing the minister role. She was really doing the coaching role in that she called it right out. She said, you guys, you know, she talked about the affirmative action of generational wealth. She talked about the luxury of whining and cheating that other people don't have. But she didn't stop there. She also called the left up. And she said the whining on the left needs to stop. The Goldilocks, they're not perfect. This was a masterful act of leadership. It was a sacred task. They took it on well. It was like an oasis. I didn't realize I had been in a spiritual desert until they created that oasis on that stage, and they did a beautiful job tonight. David?
7 months, baby, this baby, almost. Crazy butt kissing. Now, this is a minute of Nancy Pelosi, and I'll just let her speak for herself here.
I made a prediction today to Al Hunt that it would be, he said, maybe you can win 5. I said, I want 10. He said, is that your prediction? I said, I want 10.
She's talking about winning seats in the House on the upcoming so-called election of gaining seats.
At least. We want 31 when we won in. Now, remember, in the last election, they said we were going to lose 30 or 40 seats. What? They didn't know what they were talking about. We know we're different from the presidential. We're very discreet, reptilian, cold-blooded. These are the races we have to win. Others are winning the whole country. 10.
We're very discreet, reptilian, cold-blooded.
Yeah, that's who they are in that little disclosure. I thought that was telling. Brian, brother, your thoughts.
Well, I love it when the DNC comes around every year because that means I don't have to focus much on the news and I can look into some of the older conspiracies that I really like to. you know, always trying to expand my knowledge base outside of the realm of the norm, which means you've got to look at older historical research. The DNC comes around, you already know it's going to be nothing but gaslighting, nothing but setting themselves up as some sort of great heroes with their color revolution style movements and their big personality leaders and the gaslighting. It doesn't surprise me one bit that these guys were approached $150 to go get pizza at the DNC. I think most of the nation has their minds made up by now. I think probably over 95% of people have already decided which camp they're going to be in. And it's just a small group that's actually struggling with a decision. Do I want to break out of the paradigm I was taught in academia, or do I want to just continue with that and drone on and vote like all my buddies and all my professors in school? I think that's the only group is the question of the ones that are just coming out of the academic institutions. Now, some people were never able to break out of the paradigm. You'll still see these people in grocery stores with their Biden Harris stickers or whatever stickers. And they're still just as difficult to deal with as ever. How you can watch the DNC with any, you know, you really have to turn your brain off to do it because, everything they say is just simply an inversion of the real reality. I think Robert F. Kennedy said it best when he said, you know, at the DNC over 4 days, they mentioned Trump like 187 times. And then he said at the RNC, they mentioned Biden 4. And then pointing out that the Republicans were theoretically looking more at policy and talking more about policy and talking about more of the state of the nation while the Democrats were still in their fear mode and, you know, Trump's the boogeyman, orange man, bad mode. I think it really characterized a lot. And I think it leaves probably a lot of Democrats shaking in their boots in terms of, wow, this was one of the great Kennedy family members that decides to come along and endorse Trump. I think it's a big, big deal that he did that. Now, did I prefer that he went that direction or would I have preferred him to go another direction? I don't know. There's no doubt in my mind that it's time for a third party, but as long as the media can gaslight us into believing that the polls are close every time, then there's not going to be any room for any third party. RFK, I would have loved to see him debate Trump. I would have loved to see an opportunity to get some new ideas on stage. Every year, every time we have a presidential election, I'm always looking for a third party contender who can say something that's actually intelligent, or come up with an idea. Hell, I like the idea of pizza, pizza, pizza. Who was that guy again? It was Herman, or the Godfather's pizza guy. Somebody can put that in the comments. I forgot what that guy's name was. The guy that ran Godfather's Pizza that was trying to make a third party run back, I don't know, 25 years ago. As for the state of the nation, the Democrats have continued to hold on to large swaths of power inside the government simply because they're the party for the military industrial complex and they're the party for spending. I was reading another article this morning that says, Kamala Harris's sister's husband has helped launder tremendous amounts of money through different lawsuits. Apparently, he was put in charge of a portion of the government that approves payouts on different lawsuits, and they were at one point capped at $100,000, and now they've taken this guy has taken the cap off it and used it to make sure that his buddies know where to file lawsuits, when to file lawsuits, and how, so that they can funnel government money to these different contracts through the suit. So we have a developing conspiracy taking place along the line of Hunter Biden that may explain a little bit about why Kamala Harris is sitting in the position she is, along with her husband, I think, has a lot of indicators. But as long as corruption continues, the Democrats tend to gravitate toward that corruption because they think they can use it to capitalize personally or have their entities or institutions capitalized. That's the same line thinking as Act Blue. Act Blue is nothing more than a transaction clearinghouse that launders mass amounts of donations through a cleaning system. However, the FEC has some problems there, and James O'Keefe has been able to capitalize on that. He's done a great job with it, and he shows how the power structure always changes up. This conspiracy with Act Blue is very similar to the one that you saw in the television show Breaking Bad, when Walt needed to launder a bunch of money, and his son put up a raise, save Walt campaign online, and then Saul picked up an open source intelligence guy who started making $15 and $20 donations and laundered millions of dollars through that particular platform. Walt found it to be embarrassing, if you remember the show, but the simple fact was that it worked, and nobody seemed to be much the wiser. I see it all the time related to false flags with different actors playing different positions. And the very first thing that happens post false flag event is that hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, are funneled through these small donations to these quote unquote victims of the false flags. So it's an old trick. It's been around a long time and it'll continue to be around for a long time. Same thing. They can't get enough people under the house at the DNC. So they're Same thing. Let's go pay people to put their names on the list and get their faces inside there so we can photograph them. I'm frankly surprised we haven't seen more artificially enhanced photographs and images come out. And one thing about the Obama with six fingers, just so y'all know, artificial intelligence has a fundamental problem. And you'll always see this six finger thing related to artificial intelligence. It can't count five fingers and limit it. It does more like what it sees, if that's the right word. And that's why you're always seeing six-fingered people inside crowds that are produced by artificial intelligence. I've seen it probably 40 times in the last 2 months. Or I've heard about it or seen it in an actual image. So you'd be shocked how much information out there is being poured onto us that is actually artificially intelligence generated. We're going to see some more of that today, which is actually pretty impressive. We're going to use it for good, and if assuming it's halfway accurate, you're going to get a real good look at what the old world might have looked like.
Yeah, and sparked another thought in me. So when I would teach U.S. government classes, I would have to really kind of invent definitions because the stultifying definitions in textbooks are oftentimes bullshit. And for government, is that me? Where is that sound coming from? You hear that sound too?
No, sir.
Huh. Oh, I see. Oh, I see what. Yeah. Okay. I got it off here. So for government, I would say, okay, here's a definition for consideration. that government is the creation and the management of policy. And that's where you get politics, and policy is just what you're going to do. And so much of what you see in the DNC and in the RNC too is playing on human beings as emotional herd animals and just getting an emotional feeling in order to bullshit them into the policy position that you want to manipulate them into without going through the work. So when you consider if you're actually going to do something, if you create a policy for yourself and you're going to have to manage that, you're going to be looking at what outcomes do you want to get done? What pathways are you going to take? And it's a very practical step-by-step procedure in order to get stuff done. And the defining characteristic, and this goes back to the most respected living philosopher, Harry Frankfurt, and his bestseller from 2005 on bullshit, where this Princeton emeritus professor said, you know, he had to write this book on bullshit because that's pretty much all everyone is going to get in politics. And it is just a manipulation to herd people into a preferred policy position of what you're going to do. And that's all that you see from these liars is just manipulation and just telling stories like that Van Jones was talking about without any substance whatsoever. And the test, going back to Bucky Fuller, is the test for human beings, if they're going to continue, is a test of integrity. And that will human beings have the capacity to tell the truth and the full truth and to tell it right now? If not, we're going to be herded into another great reset. All right, let's go on. Here, Cackler Kamala versus Trump, facts and optics. We got several of those. All right, Kamala Harris was the least liked vice president ever. And this is Jimmy Dore, and I'll give him a minute here to remind you of what we were all shown. And we're getting to the point of that we're looking at about the public opinion 3-1 for Trump right now.
So she went from being, even NBC News poll said this was from, what, this was like from 2023. That was in 2023. She hits a record low for vice president net favorability. Even Jimmy Kimmel, the cuck of the establishment that he is, even he said so. Watch this.
Kamala Harris's approval rating is now at 28%, which is an historic low for any modern vice president.
28%, by the way, is the USDA daily absolute maximum amount of Kamala Harris allowed. She gets lower rating than Jimmy Kimmel's COVID beard. And he's saying that in church. Okay. And you remember when they wanted to kick her out? This is from Slate Magazine in 2022. If Biden runs again, he should pick a new... She wasn't even good enough to be VP twice. She was the most unpopular vice president in the history of vice presidents. And all I can say is congratulations on breaking the previous low record for unpopularity. Finally, that was a trophy she actually earned.
I think only Jared from Subway has polled as a less favorable possible candidate.
And they go on, and just to remind you that that is what Kamala was. And I think what we saw is the absolute worst candidate for president and vice president that White Hat selected, and the ones that would be most easily to slay for Biden and for Harris. And there may be more reasons for Biden, and that would get into the possibility of JFK Jr. Kamala Harris fanatics can't think of one reason why they like her. And that's true. This goes on for 5 minutes. I'll play like a minute.
I was asking members of the public why they think Kamala Harris is a good candidate to be president of the United States. You will be absolutely shocked by their answers.
Yes. 1,000%.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your favorite thing Kamala's done in the last 4 years?
Wait for it.
Honestly?
Yeah.
actually, don't use this.
Oh,
yeah, that's all we get for 5 minutes is that they don't know shit. And that points out to the what I was talking about is just it's an emotional response. It isn't thinking at all. But as we've been talking about, Elon Musk's poll on X shows Trump leading Harris by 79%, debunking the media's even contest. Now, I think that had been flooded in with bots after a while to try to prop up Kamala. I don't know. But that's with 5.8 million votes. I think that that's what we're looking at, is a 3-to-1 ratio, a wipeout. And that's with the optics that we keep seeing. And then with corporate media as well, trying to hold up Kamala. And I'll play this.
Thank you, everybody, very much.
Thank you for coming.
Now, I want to point out the ridiculous stupefaction of the question. And if, you know, I as a teacher were to be rating this from a reporter of trying to get to something useful, what's your response to Kamala Harris campaign attacking you for being in this town because they say they are white supremacists here? It's just a stupefying, childish question.
Who was here in 2021? Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
And that was a mic drop moment. And we got two more here left. 50 Republican service members and veterans slammed Governor Waltz for distorting his military service record in a scathing letter. And the letter is excellent. And I'll just read a couple of it because it's very much in the tone of military. And it just hits: the office of the vice president is a position that requires the trust of the American people and a solemn commitment to duty on behalf of the United States of America. As veterans who have served our nation, we feel compelled to address your egregious misrepresentations and urge you to come clean to the American people. You have stated that you are damn proud of your service, and like any American veteran, you should be. But there is no honor in lying about the nature of your service, repeatedly claiming to be a retired command sergeant major when you did not complete the requirements was not honorable. And this is Emperor's New Clothes shit they're talking about. Nor was it honorable to claim to carry weapons, quote unquote, in war when you had not served in war, and abandoning the men and women under your leadership just as they were getting ready to deploy was certainly not honorable either. To be blunt, when you falsely claim military service that did not happen and abandon your post, you diminish the real sacrifices made by veterans who did serve in combat. Military service is not merely a job or a uniform. Those who serve in the armed forces endure rigorous training, face perilous situations, and make sacrifices that most civilians can't comprehend. And it goes on from there. So, and here are all these guys and U.S. representatives. Ooh, that left a mark. Senator Hawley, how did DHS lose track of so many kids? Senator Josh Hawley, representative in Missouri, a Republican, is blasting the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas after a recent report from the department revealed they've lost, quote unquote, lost track of more than 250,000 unaccompanied children. And of course, that's unexcusable. And that would raise the question of what happened to those kids? Where are those kids? How could they have been? And it's pointing to the reveal of the official trafficking for sex and worse. Brian, your thoughts, brother?
You know, there are a lot of horrible things in this world, and the idea that a child would have to go through that sort of loss or abandonment or even abuse is one of the things that keeps me up. It's unfortunately a fact of this world that a lot of these kids are being taken and end up disappearing. Where they're going and what they're doing, I don't know. I imagine that there's a reason that Pizzagate was never taken seriously. I imagine that there was a reason that they had to fabricate the whole Comma Pizza cover up related to it. I've always had a theory that it's blackmail machines that control our politicians, and part of the blackmail machine is high powered individuals getting caught up in Mossad style traps. It happens. As for the DNC on another issue, it's an absolute freak show. I mean, you've got, you can get vasectomy vans, bodies for Harris, abortion rights, Barbie. They call it freedom, but it's slavery in a whole different breed of cat. It's slavery. There's a buffet of different causes and crazies that, that come along. And of course, you know, what that Black Caucus guy said was very, very obvious. We have to try to act normal for 70 days. It reminds me of that Babylon Bee parody where Satan's dealing with a bunch of Democrats and trying to get them to tone it down because it's becoming so obvious what their agenda is. Now, this is a communist revolution, a color revolution, in a sense. There's a lot of jealousy and confusion among young people coming out of school, and they don't tend to break loose from that as long as they continue to have it reinforced with MSNBC or CNN and the other mainstream medias. And so they think that values means erasing values from society. To them, the greatest value is to break down all the walls that our cultural fathers have brought to us, all of the conservative traditions, family style, raising children style, educating children style. They consider progressive to be a total displacement of societal boundaries. And therefore, you're seeing this crazy develop in a whole new world. And they'll admit it. I mean, even the guy at the Black Caucus said, we can go back to being crazy. Everybody in there thinks that they have to pick up their one cause and pick up their one torch, and that everybody's going to come rolling along with them. Well, at the meantime, nobody's at the helm of the nation. You've got from Tim Walz's gesticulating, waving fists with his invisible orchestra that he's trying to develop up and trying to label him as sort of the dorky dad, beady-eyed, you know, you're missing out the fact that he's a beady-eyed communist in disguise. It's getting crazy. And when you put people through these academic institutions where the professors and the teachers are able to impress upon kids the need to be meaningful and find their position in a place of fighting for the weak and while destroying the strong, you find yourself fighting downhill toward the bottom of the barrel. What they don't realize is that once they grow up out of it or their minds wake up a little bit, they're going to have to go back and climb that mountain. And they might not have the energy to do so at that time. So I see this as sort of a Weimar Republic, which was totally depraved. You know, this was something that we should all study, but it was a totally depraved time in German history prior to World War II, where the transgenders and the sickos and the quote unquote artists had wielded a tremendous amount of political power and influence. And that depravity ended up setting the stage for a lot of very serious atrocities that came shortly thereafter. So I think we are in a bad time if these people are going to be in any sort of continue in any sort of leadership position, which they can be because they control the money that gets paid to the election cheating mechanism. And as long as that remains unexposed and justice isn't reapplied, we are simply not a democracy. We're a representative republic where there's no police force or no media reporting back to us what our representatives are actually up to behind closed doors. And that becomes a real problem, because if we found something compromising on one politician, that politician should be examined and removed. However, at this point in time, there's too much garbage on too many politicians, so they've just decided, screw it, we're going to allow the corruption to continue to the end of time.
Yeah, great comments, brother. So on its face, the control system seems to be a la Epstein. In order to blackmail people, and you have economic hitman John Perkins, two bestsellers, and he just walked people through it. He said that he was controlled by money, sex, and drugs. And as a young man, he said, hey, that was enough. I was in. And then after 9/11, as a grandfather, he decided that he would sacrifice his life and document and tell the truth. He was certain that he was going to be killed, as he was promised he would be if he talked, but he's still alive. And so I had one other point here. Oh, yeah. And just to point out that the DC madam, and then in the control system with the transgenders, that seems to be a big deal for the Satanists. And if you take a look at Big Mike and Macron and his husband, and then Big Jack Ardern, the former PM of New Zealand. And then I don't remember when, 6 months ago or whatever, we took a look at a lot of the photographs of the other wives of political leaders and raised the question, looking at those individuals who looked very masculine. And the idea that, I wonder how long this has been going on. And it is systemic. And you're right, corporate media isn't going to cover it. And traditionally, if you're going to have an empire, you have to be able to control the government for the policies that you want. You have to be controlling what is used for money in order to enrich yourselves and pay your minions. And then you have to have a propaganda machine to tell the people that it's all good. And it's crazy. And I don't have much for recommendations of what we're going to do about this, except the obvious: withdraw consent and demand the leader arrest. All right, very interesting development. RFK2's upcoming role. He's officially withdrawn from the battleground states. He said he's just suspending the campaign, not ending it. And then, for the Kennedy name as a Democrat, who chose Kamala? It wasn't voters. She went in 4 weeks from being the worst liability for the Democratic Party to the second coming of Christ without giving one interview, without showing up for a debate, without a single policy that anyone thinks isn't ridiculous. It's not democracy, it's a coronation. And she has yet to talk to the press except, just one 77-second time where she had to walk back. She was asked, hey, are you going to consider not arming Israel? And she says, oh, yeah, I'll consider that. And then her people had to say, no, we're not going to do that. Now, this is an excellent speech. And I want to go over some of the highlights of in Arizona of what RFK2 said to the Trump crowd at another ongoing huge rallies. So he begins talking about now, as you know, I left that party in October because it had departed so dramatically from the core values that I grew up with. It had become the party of war, censorship, corruption, big pharma, big tech, big ag, and big money when it abandoned democracy by canceling the primary to conceal the cognitive decline of the sitting president. I left the party to run as an independent. And he talks about corporate media. You acknowledge the people who dedicated their time for freedom in his campaign. The DNC waged continual legal warfare against both President Trump and myself. Each time that our volunteers turned in those towering boxes of signatures needed to get on the ballot, the DNC dragged us into court, state after state, attempting to erase their work and to subvert the will of the voters who had signed those petitions. It deployed DNC-aligned judges to throw me and other candidates off the ballot and to throw President Trump in jail. It ran a sham primary that was rigged to prevent any serious challenge to President Biden. Then, when a predictably bungled debate performance precipitated the palace coup against President Biden, the same shadowy DNC operatives appointed his successor, also without an election. They installed a candidate who was so unpopular with voters that she dropped out in 2020 without winning a single delegate. And he talks about his uncle and his father would relish a debate, and that Harris hasn't talked to anybody. And then what you were talking about in Chicago, the Democratic speakers mentioned Trump 147 times. Then RFK 2 says, I do interviews every day. Some days I do as many as 10. And President Trump, who actually was nominated and won an election, also does interviews daily. How did the Democratic Party choose a candidate that has never done an interview or debate during the entire election cycle? We know the answer. They did it by weaponizing the government agencies. They did it by abandoning democracy. They did it by suing the opposition and by disenfranchising American voters. What most alarms me isn't how the Democratic Party conducts its internal affairs or runs its candidates. What alarms me is they resort to censorship and media control and the weaponization of the federal agencies. He just hits over and over and over again in this speech. The Democratic Party censorship of social media was even more of a naked exercise of executive power. Yeah. Yeah. Are we really still the role model for democracy in this country? Or have we made it into a kind of joke? And let's see if there's anything else. Oh, yeah, yeah. So he's talking about, okay, so I'm aligning with Trump for free speech, war in Ukraine, and the war on our children. And the possibility of a RFK2 role is to rein in these injections. And Trump has said that he's going to make all injections to children voluntary for all public schools in the country, which would be a huge step forward. And then the possibility of RFK2 maybe even having a role to avenge his uncle and father. And then let's see this optic as well. That's the next section about the money. Well, so we'll hold off on that.
Kennedy, come on, let's be real about Robert F. Kennedy, okay? He dropped out and endorsed Trump because the Zionists told him to drop out and endorse Trump. I don't think it's any more obvious, and I don't think it could be any more clear for people that are actually analyzing the situation. He wouldn't have done it, he shouldn't have done it, but he did it because he was told to do it. Kennedy is a part of a structure that those people control. They also control Trump. So what did they do? They hedged their bets and made sure and told him what he ought to do.
We'll see. We shall see. That is an important move on the game board. And as to what will develop consequently, we'll all be able to observe. And now it's almost September, and the election is in the beginning of November. All right, following the money. Breaking the big lie, 818,000 jobs that Joe and Kamala claim to have created aren't actually there. Largest downward revision in employment in 15 years. Ouch. And that's what these people do. They grab a headline, and then Biden, the actor playing Biden, talked about that in his speech, and then they have to admit that it was bullshit. Oh, yeah, let's play a little bit of this.
Huge revision down, 818,000 fewer jobs. This is basically the government's overstated the amount of people in the workforce. And even when you look under this, manufacturing was down 115,000 people. So this is a revision down, a significant revision down.
And Biden claimed at the DNC that the U.S. is now creating jobs and less dependent upon imports. Well, no, the trend is the worst that it has ever been in terms of having a negative balance of trade. And that, of course, isn't going to be anything that the Dems talk about.
the largest in 15 years that we've seen. And it basically says that the government has now overstated the amount of people who are working in this workforce. It shows weakness in the job markets over the past year that we didn't realize was there, but now we know is there. So again, 818,000 overall jobs down, manufacturing down 115,000 in this. And if you just wrote construction down 45,000. So these numbers are huge numbers in revisions.
President Biden, Kamala Harris have a great track record on the economy.
Let me give some context for that. So this is ABC. This is the Secretary of Commerce. And this is the speech and the talking points that these liars, lie contest winners are given to give. And this is what the politicians are always going to do if they're asked an inconvenient question. They're going to slime away from it. And that's what this bitch is going to do.
Inherited economic crisis, and it is now strong.
Reporting pushes back a little bit on what the Biden-Harris administration inherited. It says that really that some of the job growth and stuff like that had really started rebounding post-pandemic, even as they came into office. But there was some growth in the manufacturing sector for sure. I am curious as to your thoughts on today, the Bureau of Labor saying that more than 800,000 fewer jobs were actually created than initially reported. And we have a soundbite here just to play. We can listen to it together because Donald Trump is already addressing this on the campaign trail. Let's take a listen to that one together.
The administration padded the numbers with an extra, listen to this one, 818,000 jobs that don't exist. So they said they existed, and they never did exist. They built them up so that they could say what a wonderful job they're doing.
So when you hear that, do you potentially think that this new numbers could be a liability for this campaign?
No. When I hear that, first of all, I don't believe it because I've never heard Donald Trump say anything truthful.
It is, though, from the Bureau of Labor.
I'm not familiar with that. But look, let me just say this.
It's called denial. Denial is the first response of criminals just say, no, it was me. It doesn't exist.
I have talked to hundreds of business leaders who.
All right. And then this bullshit anonymous. And then this is all they are going to do. They're going to go back to their script.
Have looked at Harris's plans, who have looked at her focus on innovation, her focus on, you know, helping businesses, her focus on. She has said over and over, I am pro business. So I think the optimism is real.
Lying.
Allosaurus had never seen such bullshit before.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. But that's all that we see over and over and over again. And as a government teacher and a history teacher talking about current events and showing current events to the students, I would play clips like that. And the students would, it would take a while because I would set the context of the class that they're being lied to and they're being bullshitted and that they don't have to believe me. I'm going to show them. And the students would look and they would make that conclusion for themselves. And then that's why I would get the average rating as A+ of a teacher. And the parents would often communicate back to me via email saying that, your class is what my child talks about most. And the work that my child does for your class has tangentially only to do with the class. They're now exploring all kinds of issues associated with this when they're looking for themselves based upon that they're seeing that they're not being told the truth. Your thoughts, Brian?
Well, there's no doubt that these government agencies are loaded up with sycophants of all different types on every level at the top. And this is the institutional corruption that I've been talking about for a long, long time. They handpick their senior executive service member to run any government agency so that they can control and modify whatever information they need to control and modify that comes out of that particular agency. It's the bureaucrats that run those agencies on a day-to-day basis. But when it comes to leadership and direction and how that government institution is going to be used against the American people, that is up to the senior executive service and their driving forces behind it. It needs to be gutted out. It needs to be changed out. And we get almost no honesty from our government at any level anymore. It's completely frustrating. What are we paying for in theory? You know, we're not paying for a functioning government that's willing to tell us the truth on any matter or any issue. Just this week, it came out that cholesterol is actually good for you. That this whole thing about all these drugs to reduce serotonin or uptake re-inhibitors or whatever the heart drugs are was all a bunch of bullshit, and that living on a farm and eating the eggs and bacon is actually the best thing you can possibly do. You know, hey, leave it to our government to give us a bunch of lies that enrich their partners. And this is exactly what that jobs report was, or in the line of, which is we're going to modify this and make sure people think this for political purposes. And so what? We can go back later and we can bury it. No big deal.
Yeah. So
tell me an agency that hasn't had that attitude towards the American public.
Yeah.
FBI, CIA, Department of Labor, Border Patrol. I mean, you name it. The opinions, it's always the same. It's always the same. We're paying for absolutely nothing in our government, yet it expands every year. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Prior to September 11, 2001, the government spent $37 billion on the same agencies that make up the Department of Homeland Security. Today, 2024, $875 billion.
It's absolutely crazy. And in terms of talking to my students and asking the question, is that your textbook and what you've learned so far is that the description of the American government is, first of all, limited. That was a big ideal. We go into the whole background of that through the Enlightenment and the ideals of the Declaration of Independence, of a limited government under the U.S. Constitution. And in support of the principle of inalienable rights. And after enough of these examples, the students see for themselves, and I can't get anybody to argue that that would be the accurate description of the government. And then we talk about, well, we're going to have to call it something else. What are we going to call it? And people would see that they're dictating policy. They are saying what we're going to do, and then they do that. Without concern and often in opposition to the will of the American public. So it's not a representative government. And it's just, well, what are they doing that for? And then it would be the acquisition of an empire, and that the imperialists of, and then the frame of World War I and World War II, World War I were the colonizers who had conquered all of the world that they possibly could in order to control resources, both natural and human. They had a war against each other. And then the promise of World War I, where my two grandfathers were lied into, and the rhetoric was a war to end all wars and a war to make the world safe for democracy. They didn't do that. The winners stole the losers' colonies, and World War II was pretty much a continuation of World War I. And it is just crazy. So it looks like it's an empire, an ongoing empire. All right, finally. Oh, we got two topics left. We have one update, which I think is important to point out for COVID. Who's moneypox narrative today? Not a single death yet outside of the Congo. And this is Meryl Nass, health professional. I told you. If you want to make up deaths, Congo is probably the easiest place in the world to get away with it. Who is giving out TPOX through NIH? Says it does not work against Congo's money pox. So we'll see what happens with that narrative. Because I do conclude that white hats are in control, I think they're going to keep pushing out this monkeypox, and they're going to attempt to lock us down. And then that'll be a battle. So when I keep talking about watching the playing field, watching what develops, and that for our opponents to win, they have to lock us down, and they have to take a lot of steps in order to get there. And that each step that they take is going to expose vulnerabilities of our opponents. And while personally, I don't see any actions for myself personally as an individual in AMRev 2 and World War 3 to take action, you know, I'm looking. And they may attempt another lockdown. We shall see. Any thoughts on the COVID nonsense, brother?
COVID, no. Monkeypox, a little. What I'm seeing right now is that the top researchers that are at the World Health Organization that are actually being honest, they're starting to call bullshit on monkeypox. They say that it's exclusively a homosexual disease, that Bill Gates has been lying about this thing, that it's not as prevalent and that there's no proof. And it's just like COVID. It's the mysterious. There isn't a vial of it any place. So which one is it? Is it a homosexual disease? Is it something that comes out? Who knows? But they can fabricate up and gin up any sort of disease that they want. If they want to call it monkeypox, they might as well call it, you know, they can call it whatever they want. I'm not sure it's real until I start to see the results. I think a lot of what we think about these truly communicable big time diseases is a bunch of fabrications for the medical industrial complex to continue to roll out more treatments and more research on government dimes. I'm not convinced that any of this stuff is real. I think that the injuries that come as a result of the vaccines have caused vastly more problems than whatever would have been caused originally if there was some sort of virus or bacteria or whatever that was out there, because the human body would tend to adapt. It'd cut it out, clean it out. The human body is absolutely amazing at cleaning out any sort of toxic material and infection. Sure, we get old. Sure, we don't have all the same structures that were in place before, but I think that modern medicine hurts us more than it helps us. And go back to a proper diet and go back to a little bit of exercise and a healthy mind and a healthy lifestyle, and you'll find that your body slowly comes back around. As for cancers, a lot of people believe different things about those as well. I tend to be one that think it can be cured naturally with some guidance from some of these some other alternative medicine researchers.
And I'll put into the show notes is that Brian makes a key point, is that the CDC and WHO and 100 other organizations all have to admit under FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, that no, we don't have any of the COVID, no example of it, but it exists. We don't have any, but we're going to dictate it exists. I'll put the documentation in for that. And as far as alternative measures for treating cancer, I'll put into the show notes too the documentation that we discussed most recently, just a couple of weeks ago, of the documentary Cancer, the Forbidden Cures, which a colleague of mine at Stanford's medical school shows to her medical students, with documentation of that cancer, yeah, it has cures. Yeah, it does. All right, and finally, we have what Brian was talking about before, the 1893 Chicago World Fair. And that this is I'll play a little bit of this. These are photographs. And about 6 months ago, Brian and I took a look at the 1904 St. Louis World's Fair that was just a few miles of where my parents grew up. And I would love to be able to talk to Grandma and Papa again in order to find out what they knew about this. But this is Chicago in 1893. And this is before the power tool. And again, we were lied to that what you're going to see was just temporary buildings. And this is an AI-generated compilation of the photographic evidence.
More than 130 years ago, the city of Chicago, Illinois, seemed too grand to be real. This was the location of the 1893 World's Fair, also known as the Columbian Exposition. At the heart of this historical phenomenon was an ephemeral metropolis known as the White City. The fairgrounds sprawled over 600 acres, featuring more than 200 monumental structures that...
600 acres, 200 structures, and we're told that this was all conceived of, architectured, excavated, plumbed, built. And I believe the timeline for this one was 2 years. It was in St. Louis, and you know, I'll put into the show notes what Brian and I talked about for that as well.
Fine imagination. The manufacturers and liberal arts building alone covered nearly 32 acres. With the capacity to fit four of the great Roman Colosseum inside and seat 300,000 people.
Uh-huh. Temporary building. When it was completely functional.
Its vastness was almost incomprehensible.
People. University of Michigan Stadium holds, I think, 108,000.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. And just to be able to construct this with the waterways, too, and the it's just all crazy. But the scope of this with the AI is just so beautiful and mesmerizing. I'll play a little bit more of it.
One of the event's most iconic images is the 65-foot golden statue of the Republic, gleaming in the sun and towering over the central lagoon of an elaborate canal system. Borrowing ideas from ancient Venice, visitors could cover more territory by traveling in Venetian-style gondolas through the canals that spanned most of the fairgrounds. Norway even sailed a full-sized replica of a Viking ship across the ocean to be put on display. Approximately 27 million people from around the world were introduced to foods that have since become.
And this is another building similar to what we saw in St. Louis that was claimed to be temporary, but this is redundant architecture for the design with these trusses in order to hold up this magnificent building.
Universally recognizable, such as peanut butter, Hershey's chocolate, Pabst Blue Ribbon, Cracker Jacks, Juicy Fruit Gum, and Vienna sausages, to name a few. The integration of electrical power into nearly every aspect of our lives can, in many ways, be traced back to this event. Electricity lit the night, with the grounds illuminated by more than 100,000 incandescent light bulbs, a recently patented invention at the time. Technological marvels such as the first practical electric automobile and the first electric kitchen with an automatic dishwasher were also introduced. The entertainment area brought to the public the concept of amusement parks, with attractions, sideshows, international villages, and the first widespread.
Yeah, and that Ferris wheel could hold 2,000 people, and of course that was torn down.
Use of souvenir merchandise like postcards, coins, and other memorabilia. Interestingly, spray paint and the concept of whitewashing can also be traced to the fair. The very first Ferris wheel was created for the event by bridge builder and steel magnate George Washington Gale Ferris. As the story goes, he sought to rival the Eiffel Tower, the highlight of the 1889 Paris Fair. At 264 feet tall, his wheel could accommodate 2,160 people at a time and offered panoramic views of the entire fairgrounds. The precursor to the electric moving sidewalk from the 1900 Paris Expo was also debuted in Chicago. It was constructed on the pier to save people from having to walk the 2,500-foot length to and from their steamships. Much like its successor in Paris, there were multiple platforms moving at different speeds in a looping circuit. The first platform was for standing and moved at only 3 miles per hour, while the second, fitted with benches, moved slightly faster at 6 miles per hour. As we delve deeper into the World's Fair events, a pattern begins to emerge, one that seems to defy the conventional history we've all been taught. In cities all over the world, we consistently see the same grand and ornate structures, civil engineering and infrastructure projects being constructed on a colossal scale within an impossible time frame. Less than 30 years after the Civil War, we find cities like Chicago looking as if they could be part of Vatican City or anywhere else in Old World Europe. Yet we're told that everything was built using wood, plaster, and temporary materials, with the intention of demolishing them when the fair ended. However, with
so part of the hope of what we're looking at here is the possibility of what human beings were and what can be again.
Without exception, some isolated buildings still stand today because some were constructed with permanent materials. Everything else got destroyed. But we get a glimpse of the craftsmanship involved through structures like the Art Institute of Chicago and the Museum of Science and Industry. In Chicago's case, the majority of the fairgrounds didn't need to be demolished because they were conveniently destroyed by fire a few months after the event ended. Why were certain ones constructed from permanent materials? And why did they so often hold the title of the world's largest building at the time? It raises the question, how could the world's largest buildings have been constructed using mostly temporary materials? Are we to believe that just over a century ago, people made a habit of building some of the largest, most magnificent, and ornate buildings ever seen, only to use them for a few months? Even if we disregard the buildings themselves, the earthworks involved in these projects would challenge modern capabilities and equipment under such tight timelines. And most importantly, why would they do all of this just to destroy it? Could the World's Fair events have been the perfect cover to hide the remnants of a unified global system that existed before the upheaval of the Civil War and two world wars were used to reshape our world? The similarities between the narratives surrounding the fairs, the architecture, and the scale all seem to point to something more than coincidence. It suggests a carefully orchestrated erasure of a past we were never meant to remember. We have to ask ourselves, how much of our history has been rewritten? What has been lost? And how much has been hidden in plain sight?
Yeah, I wasn't going to play that whole thing, but wow, I just couldn't stop it. It was so inspirational. Brian, your thoughts?
There are a lot of things about this world that I simply don't understand, and I'm okay with that. I understand some things. I feel like it's such a child when I see something like that. And I think of, you know, my mind has no choice but to go back to my biblical roots, where I know that the folks in the antediluvian world were living some, you know, 400, 600 years old. I'm 50 years old. By their standards, I would be a five-year-old child in terms of growth, in terms of my lifespan. What the human mind could produce with magical access to spiritual forces that came from, that originated in the heavens or other dimensional type things, combined with a long life of 400 to 800 years, combined with a youthful body that remains youthful for hundreds of years, I think is spectacular. The other thing is, the Earth is capable of producing tremendous amounts of resources and replacing its own resources. We used to think of oil as a limited resource. I know when I was a kid, I was taught that it was decomposing dinosaurs and biomatter that made up oil. Ridiculous. Now, of course, Fletcher Prouty and many others have exposed that as its oil is a renewable resource that continues. So that gives mineral rights tremendous amount of long-term value if you're not going to deplete the oil reserves. But it appears to me that at some point along the way, somebody has chosen to hide the, let's call it anti-gravity or levitation type scenarios, frequency type connections, communications. All those things would have to be world-class and hugely effective. Just think about the idea that they said 27 million people from around the world went and visited that Chicago World's Fair. Now, you've got to transport all of those people in. That's a tall order, 27 million people from around the world, when the United States at the time would have had a population of, I'm guessing, 3 million, 4 million, 27 million people from around the world visiting Chicago at one point in time appears to me to be a superhuman type of scenario. So what am I to make of it? I don't know. You know, I've watched a lot of great and enlightening theories on things like this, including AWAR's 5-hour series, and many others over the years, but I simply don't know what to make of it, because my experience with deception has been so large. Like I said, when I had to go through it after the Pulse nightclub, I had to rethink everything I thought I knew, because I realized shortly thereafter that everything that academia had ever programmed into my mind needed to be rethought. So is it time now to stretch out and rethink everything again? Maybe, especially with all these new revelations that have come out in the last few years about this Tartarian empire, or this large international workforce that's capable of, or even angelic workforce that's capable of putting these structures together without, you know, your typical 6-foot tall human being.
Very good. And I like what you said about, like, being as a child and having that perspective. And I think that is one of the ways that our opponents have manipulated us, by having the pace of society be so quick and so quickly changing relative to human psychology, that our parents are disrespected because the parents have to are somehow exposed to the next generation as being relatively ignorant, and that the voices that should be trusted are the official voices because they say that they know what's going on, and compared to the parents, they don't know, so that the values are eroded. And there's no shame. The wisest people are the ones who say that they are truthful about how little that they know. Because in order to say that you know something, pretty much for me, I got to get hands-on and eyes-on. Otherwise, I'm skeptical. All right, we'll go on to final thoughts. Patriots, just hang in there. I continue to see that every step that we're seeing in the progression of the news is just, I mean, that X poll, 5.8 million people, we're at a 3-to-1 ratio now. And at the same time, I know from my own experience of my family is they're not there yet. They need to have something to break, I'll say it bigly. And I still think that that is going to include an economic paper collapse. I don't think that the normies are going to be able to psychologically talk themselves out of a system if we get this paper collapse and perhaps a bank bail-in. So every step that we get closer and closer to what I hope will be an election rather than a selection, I'm liking it better and better for truth. And in terms of the ends of empires, historically, is that it looks, from my understanding as an academic, it looks a lot like what we're seeing now. Just official denial. And the official push of the propaganda getting more and more outrageous. And the gap between reality and the propaganda gets more and more extreme. And you get this polarization. And then it's just when it snaps very quickly. So just hang in there and we'll all see together what develops. But I'm encouraged in seeing that gap, and that it may be that, and from my perspective, it seems totally legitimate that this is a test by the Creator in order for people to sort themselves into three categories: the good, the truthful, and that you can be like a child. You can admit that I don't know much of anything, but sure looks like we're being lied to, unless there's some alternative explanation. And again, from 2000 years plus of academic and professional consideration, what we go for is something called prima facie evidence, and that you lay out onto the table what is objective and independently verifiable. You walk around the table with all kinds of perspectives, this allegorical table of evidence, and anybody can contribute what they see in terms of analysis and interpretation and different perspectives of policy preferences of what we should do about that, including the policy of we shouldn't do anything. We just leave it there. And that people are being sorted. So there's the good, the truthful, which includes that I don't know much of what I'm looking at. Then there's the bad, the deceitful, and those are the intentional parasites. And then there are the people that include pretty much all of my family members whose cognitive dissonance, the effects of the poison, the torture, and the mind control don't have them equipped. They're not up for this contest. They're still in denial. They're still parroting the talking points of the leaders. And it's still too much for them to admit that that it feels like they're being lied to. They're still believers in the oligarchs, in the dictators, in the dictates. So I'm happy with the status of things, and we'll see what's going to rock and roll. I think that something is going to break before the election, but if it doesn't and this fuckery is still going on after the election, then, you know, I'll force something into escalation. But I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good, brother. How about you?
I think the psychological beatings will continue until morale improves is a little wishful. My overall analysis I think ties to that famous quote that hard times make strong men make good times make weak men, and weak men make hard times. I see the cycle winding down as the weight of the laissez-faire attitudes of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even 2000s start to roll on into us here in 2024. We've allowed our government way too much reach. We've allowed our society way too much liberty in terms of we haven't prosecuted the right types of political crimes towards humanity. We've forgotten what our nation was founded on, and we've allowed large institutional control mechanisms to come in and overtake aspects of our lives. And I mean every institution. I think most importantly, the legal institution being compromised. I don't see engineering anything today like it used to be. Of course, we can build some skyscrapers. There's still some old school techniques that are available. But many people are getting older at this point in time when they should be in their productive primes of their lives. They're looking for a way out, an escape mechanism, and spending more time in front of the TV than ever before, instead of really using the good time with the wisdom to develop what it can, which is, again, from a personal perspective, why I'm considering making an adjustment. It doesn't mean I'm going to get rid of my skill set. It doesn't mean I'm going to stop helping people, which I've done a tremendous amount of. I think I have close to 1,500 files that I've processed over the 15 years in business. It simply means that I'm going to reallocate my mind to something more productive for the future of my family. And I'm certainly not going to neglect what's important. And today's my stepson's baptism. I've got to go get dressed for church after this and head on out with my wife. It's an important day for us. It's a big day, and we're looking forward to being out there. So I do have hope, but I think that we need to spend more time with the children and make sure that the children are brought through a proper mindset instead of this academic institutional clown show that's taking place right now.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate our conversations and the gravitas that you bring to it as a PI and for patriots. That's going to be true for all of us. All of us have a unique, beautiful, and powerful self-expression. And as Brian was talking about, and I was talking about, is that part of the deal is to recognize your limitations. And it was the great philosopher Clint Eastwood in the Dirty Harry movies, and one of them, Sudden Impact, which in that film, by the way, the very first scene where a diner was being robbed, and the chief bad guy is a slender black guy in his early 20s who I knew while I was a student at UC Berkeley. And one day he said, "I'm going to be in the new Dirty Harry movie." I says, "Bro, what's your role?" He said, Okay. So, you know, in the Dirty Harry movies, is like he has a line like, "Do you feel lucky, punk?" He's going to say the line the first time to me. I said, "What's the line?" He said, "I can't tell you, but let's see." No, that was the line. "Do you?" No. The line in that movie in Sudden Impact is he points the gun at my friend and says, "Go ahead, make my day." But that wasn't the line I was going to say for the Dirty Harry. Is that the philosopher's line is, "A man's got to know his limitations," and that we all do. We have to recognize our limitations and be at peace with it. But, you know, all of us have something to say. All right. Anything else, brother?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, have a great day with family and Patriots. We'll be back with more of the news that you need to know tomorrow.